Hello, come in. Lie down. Relax. Take a deep breath in. And now breathe out. We'll be your therapists today. You're listening to Triathlon Therapy.
That's too much time. Look at Steve McKenna. Steve, what are you doing, Steve? That's too much time. Advantage Reed.
Welcome back, Triathlon Therapy. No idea what number episode we're up to, but
we've 52. Got a
52, there you go. Liz, over to you. Oh, first of all, I should thank you for coming back on, Liz. Liz Blatchford, one of the RPG coaches, occasional host on Triathlon Therapy, and always brings a level of professionalism that we always lack. So thanks for coming back, Liz.
Not sure about that, but thank you for that intro. Today, we're thrilled to have the absolute legend that is Paula Finlay with us. Anyone who's been around the sport for more than 5 minutes knows about Paula's accolades over 70.3 and half distance racing. But anyone that's been around the sport a little longer knows that Paula is an absolute legend over the World Triathlon Series and short course, drafting style racing, dating way back to 2010. Recently, Paula, over 70.3, she was a runner-up world champ in 2022 and since then has an absolute spate of wins. And most recently, off back-to-back wins at Oceanside and St. George. Welcome to the show, Paula.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I've looked up to all three of you at different points in my career too, so it's really cool to chat with you all. And thank you for inviting me on.
Thanks, Paula. I think you really need bigger inspirations. You mean Apo anyway.
No, well, I mean, I go way back to racing Liz, like back in 2010, 2009, 2008, and we went head to head in a lot of races in our ITU days. And then watching you, Tim, win 70.3 worlds, and Apo, you've been a legend forever. So yeah, you're not giving yourselves enough credit.
I just think something that's so amazing about your career, Paula, is I remember like just your longevity in the sport. Like I remember you winning those, you know, World Cups that are now called WTCS. But back then the World Cups were the highest level of the ITU racing and you were so young back then. And I just think your longevity in the sport is quite amazing, and you've just been around for so long, so congrats.
It's really only hit me in the last like 3 or 4 years that I've been around forever, and this triathlon's just like my life, right? And it just feels like this is what I do, so the years really creep up on you. And I've obviously had a lot of challenges too, and like periods of time where I'm not racing well and probably should have retired, but sticking with it and finding long course racing and doing well in 70.3 kind of gave me this second career almost, and suddenly I'm 35 and I feel like I'm the oldest in the field, but I still really like it. I'm still racing well.
Do you feel like it's you are part of that old guard? Because I at Oceanside, Barrett Brandon was cheering for me and he yelled out, Apo, one of the old guard, or doing it for the old blokes. And I'm like, hang on a sec. And then sure enough, I looked at the age of like everyone I was racing and I'm like definitely in that older echelon of athletes.
Yeah.
And it's like,
I think I feel like the same way as you. Yeah, totally.
It's just like you blink and 10 years is gone.
From the commentators and everything else. And it's always up and comer and young this. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, and the veteran of the sport. And you're like, oh, yeah, shit.
I guess I am a veteran now.
Go with experience. Yeah. But can we ask Paula, what was that like way back? So I feel like 2009, you were a good junior. And then you went into 2010. Winning what was at the time the most competitive series in the world, in the W World Triathlon Series, winning races. I remember, obviously, as you mentioned, we were racing together at the time and all of us being like, whoa, who's Paula? Like, and why is she winning all of a sudden? What was that like for you, being so young and that absolutely meteoric rise to the top of triathlon?
Yeah, it was shocking to me as well. But I was good as a junior. Like basically as soon as I started the sport, I had success pretty quickly. And that's kind of all I knew. And looking back now, of course, I realize how amazing and special that was and unique, I guess, of me. But as I rolled into elite racing and started to then win those races, it kind of was, it felt like a natural progression to me, even though in reality, it was coming out of nowhere and really impressive for the age that I was and with like the lack of experience, I guess, I had racing in those elite races. But to me as a kid at the time who was just like eating, breathing triathlon, it felt like I expected that of myself. And although I was shocked every time I crossed the line ahead of people like Emma Snowsill and Lisa Norden and Helen Jenkins, like all these legends of the sport, I was always surprised, but then it just became my expectation that I would do it again and again and again. So I think I appreciate it much more now that I'm older than I did in the moment back then when I was 20 and 21. And you're just living in it so hard that those moments just pass by and you look to the next thing so quickly. I wish I had taken a couple minutes to like appreciate how cool it was instead of just like thinking about the next race. But that's kind of, I think, common for a lot of athletes when they're in their prime of the sport is just looking to the next thing too quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Paula, when you were so young and working under the Federation in the high performance system, obviously when you're going well, I'm assuming the support was great. And do you feel like as a younger athlete, sometimes there's too much focus on high performance and not so much about the person as well? I mean, I always worry with these younger athletes in these programs, and I'm not sure if it's changed, but you know, there's a lack of human development as well and support around everything that a kid or, you know, a young adult should be getting at that age.
Yeah, possibly. Being in the Federation at that age, like the support flows when you're doing well. And as soon as you stop racing well, it goes away really quickly. And also when you're doing well, everyone wants to be on board. They're like, this girl's winning everything I want on the train. I'm going to be her physio. I want to be her mental coach. Like there's an overwhelming amount of people that want on the bandwagon. And then literally the instant that you get injured or have a bad race, everyone's like, well, it's not my fault. Step back. That was not me. So as a 18, 19, 20 year old trying to deal with these serious ups and downs in the sport, it is really challenging. And you don't really, I had to lean a lot on like my parents and just people that loved me no matter what, no matter what was going on in my life. But I think that you're right in that they're not really thinking of you as like a whole complete athlete who wants to race for 20 more years. It's like, you're fast right now. Let's go win an Olympic medal next year, regardless of the cost of that. And for me, the timing was that I was racing so well, and then I got injured before the Olympics, where I think with my ability, I could have won an Olympic gold medal, but just the way it was kind of mismanaged with the team around me that was way too big and I didn't know who to listen to. And I do take some responsibility, of course, but it's really overwhelming as a young athlete. So I'm not sure if it's changed now and what it looks like. Unfortunately, Canada hasn't really had another rising star emerge in the last decade or so. Tyler Mislichuk's raced well and not very many females, but yeah, it's definitely a problem that you see in a lot of these, including in Australia, where you'll have like superstars in our generation is with like Snowsill and Densham. And now it's like kind of a lull where there's not as many really dominant women. So it's a really tricky spot to be in as a young athlete, I think.
Yeah, I kind of found that like going through, you know, I had a brief stint in ITU racing and I just felt as a, you know, 21, 22 year old, like so much pressure to perform. And if you didn't perform, it's like you don't get funding to the next race. And I remember like being on an Australian like team trip and none of us were performing well. And the coach at the time just pretty much just like left us in Europe. And he's like, all right, I'm done with you guys. And we were just like left to our own devices in Europe. It's like, there was like four of us. Like, I think Aaron Royal was there and we're all like 20 years old. Like, you know, you're an adult, but you're not really an adult at 20. Like you think you are, but you're not. And we were just like left in Europe and we were just like, all right, I guess we're just on a holiday now for 3 months.
Apo, and when we just like went around with me in your mid 20s, you were not an adult.
What is an adult? I still don't feel like an adult, but yeah, exactly. Yeah, being able to like live on your own and support yourself and not have your like your parents' house be your house. And I don't know, that
Yeah.
sometimes drags on kind of long when you're a triathlete, but it's not a bad
Yeah,
thing.
for sure.
So obviously, like Paula, there's been amazing success also in the long course racing. I guess it's sorry to go down the cliche path, but listeners will care. What's the big goal for this year? Is it just the PTO series? What really excites you at the moment and what are you focusing on?
Yeah, this year's kind of interesting because I've had consistent success over the last 5 years or so, but prior to that, it was not like that. I was injured a lot. I was like had low iron. I don't know. There's a lot of struggles. So to have this sort of consistency over the last 4 years has been really good for me and kept me in the sport, making me want to race more. And then obviously the emergence of the T100 and the PTO has made it so that I can make a living in the sport a little bit more realistically. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of good things that have happened, but I've also struggled a little bit with wondering like how much longer do I want to do this for? Do we want to start a family? Eric and I got married last year. So I'm just starting to realize in the last few years that I am kind of at the tail end of my career and what do I want that to look like? I haven't done an Ironman yet. I think I could still be really competitive at 70.3 World Championships. There's this big opportunity with T100 to go all in on that. So there's almost too many options now in the sport, which is great for professional triathlon. But as someone who might only have 3 years left in the sport, I really have to decide what I want to do. So at the beginning of this year, I thought I'm going to do an Ironman and that's going to be something fresh and new and a change for me. And that I was all in on doing Lake Placid. That was kind of my goal for 2025 and then maybe Kona if I qualified. But at the beginning of the year, I also made a coaching change, and this new coaching team that I put together suggested that I wait till 2026 to go all in on Ironman, like do the pro series, and this year focus on podiuming at 70.3 World Championships and just like being fast, doing the T100 series just to help me like get faster and race the best people, but really put a big focus on 70.3 Worlds in Marbella. So that's my goals have shifted 10 times this year, but that's my current path is 70.3 Worlds and then Ironman 2026. So yeah,
nice.
That's the scoop. That's the triathlon therapy scoop.
Really?
Hot off the press.
Yeah, I haven't, like I did say back a couple months ago on our own podcast that I'm doing Placid and that's like my thing, but training for an Ironman is kind of scary as someone who's never done one and a bit daunting. So you really have to be all in and completely committed to it, and waffling back and forth like I have been is not obviously the best prep for getting ready to race. And I do want to go in and like win my first one, or, you know, be really good right out of the gates and not have one where I'm like walking the marathon and hating it. I want to have like a semi good experience, recognizing that it's very
hard, the idea, so. Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry if it's been asked a lot before, Paula, but please tell us a bit about your coaching change.
Yeah, I worked with Paulo Sousa for the last 4 years, who was awesome, and went to him in 2018. So I guess it's been more than 4 years. It's been more like seven, but I was struggling a lot, kind of making this transition to 70.3, not sure how that would look, but I was dating Eric at the time, who was also coached by Paulo. So that was a little bit of like my motivation to switch coaches and go work with that group. But Paulo was great in managing my return to healthiness and being able to run consistently, getting to a level where like I wasn't scared of going to train for running and I could get to a decent mileage every week. So had a lot of success under him, podium at 70.3 Worlds in 2022. And I just really felt like towards the end of last year, I needed a change, not because there was anything wrong with him, but because I just reached this point in my career where I'm like, I was not loving it every day. I was not excited to race. I needed to shake it up a little bit for the last couple of years. And I felt like I'd regret it if I didn't try something new. So I didn't have a coach in mind, but for a couple of weeks, I was kind of just doing my own thing. And with Eric's help, realized that would not work. And I needed to definitely have a coach. So reached out to several people, and surprisingly, most of them said that they didn't have the time or weren't interested. So I went a little bit of a different route and started talking to a few cycling coaches. And was introduced to Carmen Small, who works as the sport director for EF cycling on the women's side. She's a TT national champion for the US, like back in 8 years ago or so. So knows a lot about time trial, but not a lot about triathlon. So we've teamed up and sort of put together a team of a run coach and a doctor, and like kind of how a cycling team works, you know, like an expert in everything, with Carmen leading the whole thing. So it's been really cool. It's fun to have a female coach. It's completely different than what I was doing before. A lot more focus on the bike, and that's what I'm doing. Yeah, it's fun to do something that's so different this late in my career and a little bit unconventional.
Yeah, it sounds excellent.
Seems to be paying off. I mean, two pretty convincing victories at the highest races in North America. So,
well, to be honest, I think a lot of this is like a mental switch, because I've only worked with Carmen since just before Oceanside. So no training we were doing impacted how I raced there necessarily. But I think this year my mindset has been different. I've been excited to race. I've enjoyed the training every day. And from what like Eric has told me, it's just a noticeable switch in my attitude. And I think that at this level, so much of it is about the mental and going into a race happy, excited. And then obviously having the training to back it. But for me, that's how I've felt the most difference, is like the mental side of it and being happy.
So Paula, just with the, you know, you said you're surprised that coaches said they didn't have the time. And I think from a coaching perspective, it's really daunting if an athlete with a lot of past success comes to you, because you know that you're going to have to, you want to put in a lot. And also I think you're sort of in a lose-lose situation with an athlete of your ability, because it's like, if you do well, it's like, well, she was already good. And if you do bad, it's all the coach's fault. So I get it. I've said the same thing to athletes that are really quite, you know, at a really high level. I'm like, I'd way rather take on someone who's going really shit than someone who's going really well.
Turn them around.
Because you can turn them around. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, that's, I was surprised at first, but then it made sense. Are you coached by Tim?
Yeah, Reedy coaches me. But it was under the proviso that I go to Ironman. He said he wouldn't coach me just for 70.3s.
Well, and it was the same reasoning, in that you're doing really well at 70.3s. Like, don't change what's working. I think I can really help you sort out your Ironman issues, because I feel like that's a new frontier for you. So that was why I wanted to work with Apo again, but based on that premise. So.
That makes sense. Yeah. Can I ask? Yeah, I mean, those are the... Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, there's not like that many coaches in the triathlon world, honestly, like when I went down the list of who I'd consider working with. So it wasn't like I reached out to 25 people, but it was, I was surprised by the number that said, no way.
I mustn't have answered. I didn't know your number. Sorry.
Honestly, Tim, and you can take this off the podcast. I don't know if you guys edit, but I asked Dee Dee who I should ask, and she said Liz and Tim.
Oh, nice.
So you were next on my list.
Damn.
I don't know if you would have said yes, though, after what you just said.
Can I ask a question? So obviously interest from my own perspective as an athlete and now as a coach, but also for our female listeners, how you go about training and racing around your cycle, Paula. And has it been like a learning process? I know from a coaching perspective, everyone, like females, differ wildly. Some people won't even potentially change much around their cycle, and others, I literally cannot give them anything decent in training for the days leading up to their period.
Oh, really? How do you go? Yeah, as a younger athlete, I didn't even get a period, which was like all through my prime ITU years, basically. So it was not healthy, but it was such a taboo subject back then that not a lot of people talked about it. And when I went to doctors to ask, is this a problem? They just said, it's because you're training so much. Like, it'll come back when you stop training. And that's obviously not the best advice, which we all know now. But at the time, I was just kind of like enjoying the fact that I didn't have to deal with it every month and it wasn't impacting my racing or anything. But ever since, it was like meeting Eric around that time where like I got healthier, I was eating more, I got a regular menstrual cycle back. I do now have a regular period every month. And I'm not very good at tracking it and changing training around it. I would say it doesn't impact me that much in terms of how I feel. I usually don't feel great the day that it happens, but I've raced on days where it started and done really well. So I think that's given me the confidence that, yes, you might feel shitty, but you can still like perform well. A lot of it is just your mental ability to get over that, not feeling your best. At least for me, I know some people struggle a lot more with it, but yeah, it's not something that I'm super diligent with tracking and changing training around or anything.
Yeah. Look, I dare say the not tracking it is almost a bit of a, if I don't track it, then I don't need to adjust things and I don't need to expect to feel bad or anything like that. So from personal experience.
Right. If you know it's coming, then sometimes you're mentally like, oh, I'm going to feel terrible in 2 days. Yeah. And then you do. So yeah, sometimes not really knowing is the best, but I do like to know if it's going to happen like at a race because I don't know. That's not fun. You have to plan for that.
A good reason. Yeah.
I think, like you said, there is a big range, and Liz, you probably found this too with coaching, with how people are affected. But you know, there's some athletes where I know if I give intensity in the days leading up to their period, it's just wasted training because they feel so crap, they don't absorb it, they just get really tired, and others where it's like, no, I'm fine to go. Like it's so, just for any listeners, it is really individual, and definitely don't feel bad if you're one of those people that needs to adjust the training, because it's pretty common to do so, and it's actually for many it's the smart move. So so I'm going to jump into a bit of a different segment, Paula. It's ginger facts or fiction. Obviously you and Eric have red hair, and I thought it might be nice to just, because you hear so many, like, people throw things out about people with red hair, and I was like, I wonder what's actually true and what is total bullshit. So
maybe Liz, you have two redheads, don't you?
Yeah,
I have one. I have a redheaded daughter. Yeah.
Oh, just one redhead. Okay. So maybe you can answer too.
Yeah.
So I just need one word answers from you guys. You got to say fact or fiction. First one, redheads are going to go extinct eventually.
Fiction.
Apo?
Oh, I'm in on this as well, am I?
Yeah, yeah. You've got redheaded, like, brother.
It's like a game show. I do. Two of my brothers, they're redheads. I'm going to say that. I'm going to say that's fiction. Fiction.
Yeah, Liz.
Total fiction, because Paula and Eric are going to make sure of it.
Eric's not a true redhead. He's kind of more of a blonde guy, but I think if we have kids, they'll for sure have curly red hair.
All right. Speaking on that same topic, redheads have a better sex life than normal hair colored people. Fact or fiction? Well, I mean, obviously triathletes could be an exception to the rule because you're always so tired, but
yeah,
what do you think for other redheads?
Fiction.
What's that?
Fiction.
Apo?
Fiction.
Liz?
Fact.
It is a fact. It actually is a fact. especially redheaded women, and they're more likely to have kids as well. All right, redheads.
Is that a peer-reviewed article? Is that a peer-reviewed article?
I did. It was sort of semi-checked facts. So redheads are more prone to fits of rage. Fall up.
Fact. Yeah, that's a fact.
Apo.
Fact.
Liz.
Fiction.
I think I couldn't find anything to say that that's proven or true. So, don't know.
Just personal experience, I think, is the only basis.
What else we got here? Oh, this is a good one. Redheads sell products more effectively when used in commercials than people of other hair colors.
Fact.
Yeah, I feel like I do see quite a lot of, shampoo commercials with redheads. I'm going to say fact.
Please?
I'll go with fact.
You are all correct. Dogs and redheads, very good for marketing. Judas, who betrayed Jesus, for those not familiar, I think he was the one that got Jesus hung up and crucified. He was a redhead. Paula.
I have no idea. Fact.
Fact, I'm gonna say.
Fiction.
Yeah, that's fiction.
Okay.
Both parents have to have red hair somewhere in the family to have a red-headed child. Pull up.
Somewhere in the family, fact.
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 No, it's that's fiction. Paula, you need to really research your tribe
I'm getting these
heritage.
all wrong. Well, my mom's side
No,
doesn't
nah,
have
so there's
red
like a
hair.
mutation in the gene, but both parents have to have that mutation. But apparently that doesn't mean there has to be redhead in the family, a red hair in the family. Let's do one or two more. All right. Studies suggest if a bee is pissed off and it's going to sting someone, it's more likely to sting a redhead than it is to sting a brunette.
Fiction. Actually, fact.
Abbo?
Fact.
Fiction.
That one's a fact.
Oh.
They hate
I
it.
would
Attracted
guess
to the
because
red.
we have like really fair skin, so maybe they can smell like our blood better or something.
I was thinking more
Oh,
like the
yeah.
bulls in Spain. You know, they just see the red hair and they just get that rage and come for
Or
you.
the color.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's
That'll
where that
do.
expression comes from. You know that, oh, I was seeing red when I was angry, seeing
Yeah,
red.
yeah,
You know that?
yeah.
It's from the bees.
Yeah.
Paula, as all our listeners know, you've got quite a successful, like that triathlon life is very successful. Obviously, you've got a podcast, you've got like a social media empire. How have you found balancing kind of the obligations to social media and that triathlon life and kind of all the extracurricular activities that you do around triathlon with racing? Because
With the
from a
racing, yeah.
personal experience, I'm an introvert, obviously, and I don't really like social media. It gives me anxiety. I post once a month, and when I post a thing, I don't open Instagram for like 5 days because I don't want to see like comments or likes or anything. So, how do you balance kind of racing and keeping up with all the kind of social media that's, you know, almost required of being an athlete, like being in the spotlight these days?
A lot of it's Eric. If I wasn't married to Eric or if we weren't together, I'd be more like you. I'm not that extroverted, but I've learned to be through being with Eric, and he has a camera out all the time, and he loves the art of putting together videos and pictures. And even if social media didn't exist and we all deleted Instagram, Eric would still do what he does and take video, edit stuff, take cool pictures. And I actually also have a little bit of an artsy eye for photos. Like, I really enjoy photography and I like going out and getting cool pictures of things and editing them. So I think every athlete's so different. Some people don't like that at all, like you, but I actually like the process of it, and it's like kind of relaxing to me. And I see it a little bit more like a hobby than a need. But that's been nice because, like you said, it is kind of a requirement now with pro triathlon, and everyone's on YouTube, everyone's on Instagram, sponsors care about it so much. And over the last 3 or 4 years, as TTL and our podcast and everything has gotten more popular, sponsors have come to us as if we're like a media company to kind of create content for them as athletes as well, but so that they don't have to like outsource someone to come and get that content. So Eric and I kind of offer this like all-inclusive package of like, work with us as athletes, but we can also supply you, 100 photos a week if you want that. Which has put a huge load on Eric because he's the one that does most of the content stuff, but it has allowed us to keep good contracts over our racing career and has taken the stress off of needing to perform well. And yes, I'm still racing well. Eric's not racing as much anymore, but I think even if we weren't racing successfully, we still have these opportunities because of like the community and the media stuff that we've built. So I guess through recognizing the importance of it in our career, I've become more okay with it because I don't like having a camera on me at all the time. And I'm not always in a good mood. Not every session is like sunshine and rainbows, but I'm kind of used to it now, and I know that it ultimately is good for us and our brand. And as long as we're careful about leaving some time of our lives that's like not on the internet, there's like a little bit of a balance there, then generally it's okay. We don't fight too much, but that's what can happen. If I'm grumpy and he's got the camera out, he's like, he's pretty sensitive to like, when do you put it away? So
Josh Amberger, who seems to just love posting those moments of poor Ash when she's in not in the best mood.
Yeah, but people like that. I think that what's made TTL successful in like our YouTube and stuff is that you do see the sides of us that are pretty real. And with Eric filming me, there's like no filter. So same thing with Josh and Ash, you know, you're not talking to a video guy that you've met two times. You're talking to your husband and it's like, you'll say shit that you'd never say anywhere else. And then it gets put on the internet and then people know who you really are and what your true self is, which I think people like. They want to think they know us. And what you see is kind of what you get. If you meet us at a race, we're exactly the same as how we are on YouTube. So that's kind of what we go for.
With that, do you have people, it's weird even with this podcast, I have people coming up to me at races and chatting to me like they're an old friend. Do you get that a lot? Like, and you're like, you know, it's sort of bizarre that, you know, you don't know this person at all, but they chat to you like they know you really well.
Yeah, that's been happening kind of since we started the YouTube, and but only at 70.3 or Ironman races. Like, it doesn't happen to us day to day. So we kind of enjoy it just for those like 3 or 4 days around a race where people come up to us and say hi. And it is kind of weird that they know so much information, but we're putting it out there. So it's not their fault. People are generally really respectful and just want to say hi and get a picture or something. But we actually really like that part of races now, chatting with people that listen to our podcast or watch us on the internet. It's like just a number if you look at views or counts or likes. But then when you meet the actual person and you've made an impact on them in some way, I think that's what makes it feel like it's worth it and has some value beyond just like, you know, getting sponsors or getting likes on Instagram.
Yeah, because you guys at Oceanside, you had a film premiere, didn't you? At one of the movie theaters there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was Eric's project with our friend Nick. Eric's dream has been like to create kind of a more feature length film over the last couple of years. And so it's a 45-minute, it's on YouTube now, actually, on our TTL YouTube channel, but they premiered it in Oceanside. So they rented out a theater with the help of Castelli and sold it out. 200 people there. Wow. And they've been working on it for a couple of years. So I think it's amazing, but I'm a little biased, and it's very artsy. The music's amazing and they did it all themselves. So it's pretty impressive.
You know what we needed in our my career and your current career, Apo? We needed a Glenn Murray or an Eric to marry.
Oh yeah. Liz has a Glenn. Yeah. It does help.
Man, we could have had some good content.
I think I was, you know, like I was obviously really lucky at the time. I was early days of it, but you know, you guys have taken it to a whole new level and it's such a cool opportunity. Like the places we train and all of that, to have it documented, Paula, is something. I mean, you sound like you're aware of it and you have that perspective now, but to have something to look back on later in life, it's epic.
It is cool. And honestly, corrupt, like Glenn and Chris Corbin and we're the pioneers of this. And even Eric on YouTube, he was on YouTube before anyone else had a YouTube channel. So I think those people are still the best at it. Like Glenn's pictures, Chris Corbin's pictures, Eric's YouTube channel, like the people that really do it because they love it and they have a good eye for it, and not doing it because they feel like I'm a professional triathlete, I need to have a YouTube channel. Like sometimes that gets a little overcrowded in the space versus people that truly have a passion for it and do it because they're good at it and they love it.
I should add there, Liz, that Glenn gave probably Apo and I as much time as you got when like, pretty much free of charge. So
it
shouldn't.
It might be because he actually preferred spending time with you over me. So.
Yeah, I think Glenn's definitely saved me a couple of $1,000 in photography fees over my career. So we can't complain.
He was in Dubai last year, I wasn't expecting him to be there. That was cool.
So Paula, just be one sort of, unless Liz has got it, one or two more, but I guess listeners really love to hear the details around your training. Let's say you're preparing for a 70.3 world champs or whatever, what would be like typical swim, bike and run volume? And could you run us through maybe one or two of your very key sessions that you sort of feel like, okay, I'm in a great place after this session for the race?
Yeah, that's, I mean, I with this recent coaching change, things look different now, but I can kind of talk you through the difference, I guess, of what I was doing with Paulo and then kind of what I'm doing now. And I don't know if one's better than the other, but like I said, it was just kind of like a refreshing change that I wanted. And I see myself as a cyclist as my strength, but I felt like in races I couldn't utilize it as much, or like I was pushing good watts, but I wasn't going as fast as I should, or whatever it was. So my hope is with this new kind of cycling focus team is that my, not necessarily my watts will get better, but I'll just like get more efficient at riding and be able to like make the watts equal going faster on the bike, which is a lot of art actually to cornering properly and like taking nutrition in the right places and stuff like that. So that's been a cool change from before. But I don't know. I think for me anyway, it's not like one session that I nail and I think, okay, now I'm good to go. It's the consistency of even up to a year of running without injury. And in the past, that was like such foreign territory for me because I would get injured several times a year, not run for 6 weeks, and then kind of like build my way back, walk running, and then expect to go race well, but which I never did. But now that I can run for month after month after month without interruption, not huge mileage weeks, like I'm doing 60K a week or so of running right now. That's what gives me more confidence than anything. So, yes, the sessions are nice when you get like fancy numbers or you're running well, but to me, it matters more that I can run without getting injured. So, yeah, I would say that a typical bike week is like used to be more like 10 or 11 hours, and now I'm doing more like 15 with the cycling coach. But prior to this, I was running more like 80 or 90, and now I'm running like 60. So the switch has been cycling more, running a little bit less, and swimming 5 days a week, 4K to 5K. So kind of what
Awesome.
most triathletes do, I feel like. Nothing super special, but more
Yeah, I mean,
focus on
I think
riding.
there is that big spread with run mileage, especially like Apo and I are
Yeah.
always quite run low run mileage. You know, 60 to 80 would be a very typical week at
Yeah.
best. And then you see these athletes doing 140, 150, like holy hell.
I don't know
Yeah, I
how
don't know
some
if our
people
body can.
get, yeah. It's like I do an 85K run week and I feel like I was running every day and a couple of double runs. And I'm like, how are people
Yeah.
hitting 120K and riding 500K and swimming 25K? I'm just like,
Yeah, I don't think I could do that. It is easy to imagine how, like, Eric kind of took the stint where he was training for a trail race and he wasn't really riding or swimming. And he could get to 120K easily because it's all you're doing. And he felt
yeah,
like,
it's like 6 hours.
I have spare time, even. It's such a big difference. But yeah, when you're trying to actually do quality work on the bike and swimming, like, completely makes me so trashed in the morning if I swim hard. So I'm trying to balance all three things together in a sustainable way is kind of what I'm going for. And I've found that sweet spot to be like 60K of running with a little bit of, like quality 2 or 3 times a week, but also some easy runs. But yeah, do you
And
want
how do
like
you find
specific
it?
sessions? I don't know. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, like, with so do you have a running coach as well? And how do you find like balancing kind of the communication between everyone on your team, I guess? Is that easy? Or because
Yeah.
for me, I just like speak to Reedy and I'm like, yeah, this is my swim, this is my bike, this is my run. Whereas, is it more
Totally. Yeah.
challenging to have a bigger team and kind of facilitating the program week to week?
Yeah, that's been a big change and something that's still not completely 100% ironed out, to be honest. Carmen's leading the whole thing and she's super knowledgeable on the bike side, but she's working alongside her friend who works for another pro cycling team to actually make the bike workouts and like do the physiology testing and analyze my Oura ring and stuff like that. And we're experimenting a little bit with the running side of things. So when I first started working with them, the runs they were giving me were kind of too much like bike workouts. Like they weren't really run specific. So you could really tell that they're cycling experts, but not so much on the running side. So because I've been doing this forever, I have an idea of what I have to do. And with Eric's help and just our experience of, yeah, doing it for 20 years, I was able to kind of help them along with that. But we are currently now talking to a running coach to bring them to just help program that a little more and make sure that it makes sense around a whole triathlon program. Because if you bring in a running specific person and they're not aware of like how much load biking takes out of you, then it gets really tricky. So To answer your question, yes, it's way more complicated, but I kind of like the puzzle of it and not having it just be like plug and play. Here's your swim bike run every day. And the amount of attention that Carmen pays to what I do every day is the biggest thing that I needed. Like, she looks at my training peaks, she writes feedback, she's talking to the whole team as a whole without me having to do that. So she's definitely like my touch point who organizes everything. And I just feel like I'm taken care of, which is, I don't know, it's really nice. Some athletes need a little bit more than others, but I've missed that a little bit over the last 4 years, just like having someone who checks in every couple days and he can call on FaceTime and it's like not awkward at all. You know, it feels very much like a good relationship. So yeah, work in progress, but so far it's been fun.
Yeah, absolutely. When you've been in the sport as long as you have, Paula, it'd be, you know, be mad for any coach not to listen to, you know, what makes you tick, what you've learned along the way. And yeah, like I know from my own experience in those final years of racing, I had a coach for a few reasons, but there was a lot that I was dictating and, you know, putting into the program. You know,
for sure. I think that's kind of the natural. It's the natural evolution of like being an athlete for so long as you get to know your body better than anyone else can know it.
Yeah.
And then with someone else's expertise and a little bit of a different perspective, you can fine tune things, but ultimately I kind of know what works for me and I'm open to changing things. But I've learned a lot over making mistakes and having success and everything, which all four of us have, right? So it's kind of fun to put it all together.
We'll probably let you go pretty soon, Paula. Thank you so much. But I guess quickly, Apo, firstly, just like, how is the stress or relations between the US and Canada? Am I just reading things and it's like totally overblown, or is there about to be a war between the two countries?
Oh my God.
We're not political, qualified to answer these questions.
Yeah, we are not American. None of us are American, right?
No.
But we live in the US. Like from my perspective, I try to not look at the news as much as possible.
All right, moving on.
Scary.
So Apo had Chattanooga on the weekend. The swim was cancelled. Apo, you obviously had a really solid race. You're 4 minutes back from Sam Long, and like, what's exciting about that is you probably would have put 3 to 4 minutes into him in the swim. Do you want to quickly talk about the, like, just a quick run through of the race? But I'm really interested in your thoughts, Paula and Liz, and we did chat about it last time, Apo, last pod, about what can be done when the swim has to be cancelled. So Apo, if you just want to quickly run through what a legend you are and what a great race you have.
Yeah, I mean, fourth, it's always like it's that position that nobody wants to be in because it's off the podium, one off the podium. And I think I was in second on the virtual tracker until like 1 mile to go. But the guys in second and third, Matt McElroy and Jason West, ran 1:08. And I think they passed me virtually like on the tracker with like half a mile to go. So I was in second until half a mile to go and then got knocked down to fourth. But I didn't know because, you know, we're not racing head to head. It's a time trial start. So that's a little bit frustrating, but, you know, you just kind of have to get on with it. And I was pretty happy overall, like from a numbers perspective, good bike, good run. And, you know, Reedy knows, but I was feeling pretty bad a few weeks leading in, just like really low energy. I think I had some post-viral fatigue from a sickness after Oceanside and just never really got into my groove. But I feel like it was a good step forward and probably better numbers than I expected. I was happy with it. But we did touch on it last episode, the TT start. It's always a little bit different. It's like, I just think I went out pretty solid, but I also knew that, you know, you always feel really good at the start because you haven't swum for 25, 30 minutes of threshold. You know, you're getting on the bike fresh, so the power is coming really easily, but you got to keep that in check a little bit. So yeah, I rode pretty solid, I guess, but I didn't want to go out really hard, which some guys did. I just kind of wanted to keep it maybe a little bit above 70.3 power for that first hour and then settle in for that second hour. And I think it paid off. I was happy with the race, but I don't know, Paul, I'm sure you've had a couple of experiences of TT starts. What's your kind of mental Have you dealt with that before? And
I've actually never been to a race with a canceled swim, knock on wood.
Wow.
But
Really? Oh my
I,
word.
yeah, it's crazy. Well, actually, the one race that I have, St. Anthony's, the swim was canceled, but they made it a duathlon run, bike, run. So we did a
Okay.
5K
That's harder.
run, bike, 10K run, which
Yeah,
was
brutal.
hell. But I think
Yeah,
I'd
brutal.
prefer it over the TT start because
Same.
it kind of spreads everyone out in a way that makes it so it's a head-to-head race versus, like you said,
True,
having no
yeah.
idea what place you're in.
Yeah.
So that'd be tricky for me, racing without
So
really having any idea, especially in the men's racing.
would that be your
Yeah.
preference of how it would be done if the swim is cancelled? Just make it a 5K into like a, 16K run. After like a five ride
For
16.
70.3.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sucks, but I think that's the only way to make it a head-to-head race, right? Because you
Yeah, I
can't all
think
go
it's a
out on the
better.
bike at the same time.
I
I
think
did
when
one
you're gonna have
where,
people.
oh, sorry, I did one where they made us run 2K and then still the 90 and 21. And I found that preferable to, what you had to do in Chattanooga and what everyone recently did in Port Macquarie. I think for spectators watching, for athletes racing themselves, the non-head-to-head racing in triathlon, it's not great.
Yeah, it's a tough
That
one.
was
The only
exciting.
other idea I had was, you could have everyone have to do a 1500 meter time trial the day before at the local pool, and then you start them based on that time. So there's,
That's
I don't know, if you get a lot of people
a
watching, especially for the pros. It's
yeah.
just like you've only got organized, 15 to 30 people to go and do a time trial, and they do eight at a time, get your time, and then that's how the TT should start off, so that Apo can enjoy 8 minutes on Sam Long when he starts.
Right.
Yeah.
Like the handicap the
Yeah.
next day. Yeah, that's a good
Yeah.
idea. The
Yeah.
logistics of
And
that
then
are a little hairy.
whoever crosses the line first is actually the winner.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that idea. But then it's just so much more
But it's not
organizing
if
for
it's
the.
just the pros that do that.
True. Yeah.
Literally, let's go down to the pool, and then
All
see
80
what.
pro men down to the pool. We're all gonna
Well,
do
it's only 10
it.
lots of 1500 meters. You could do it over the day.
Yeah,
Like,
true.
sorry, you'd
Yeah, give
have
everyone a
eight.
start time.
Yeah, you know. So,
Yeah, I don't know.
wow,
I
that's.
sometimes with the running start too, like you don't, it actually doesn't spread out that much. So you are getting on the bike at the same time as a lot of guys. But I guess that's like the swim. So
Yeah.
I don't know. But I've never, like, it's interesting to hear you say starting on the bike and feeling fresh because I've actually never had that experience since I was swimming first. How much harder can you go? Is it like 30 watts higher, 40 watts higher? Because it's just coming so much easier without that like
But have you done a lot
unconscious
of time
thing.
trials? Just fresh time trials in
Yeah, I have,
cycling?
and I go out like as hard as I possibly can go, but it's such a short race that it's 140
Yeah,
minutes.
so much shorter than 90 K, isn't it? Yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, I went out at I think my overall average power was 305 watts, and I did that first 20 minutes at like 330.
Okay.
But it felt quite comfortable. Like that 330 felt like what 300 watts would probably feel like if there was a swim, if that makes sense.
Interesting.
So
Yeah.
I'd kind of try and use like heart rate data as well to gauge, because power is just a number, it doesn't really, like, heart rate's such a better tool to tell you how hard your body's working. So I kind of use both of those to judge. But yeah, I mean, I feel like I've done at least one of those every year of my career.
Yeah,
That's so surprising that
truly.
you've never done it, Paula.
Well, it's
Yeah, I
just
guess
gone
I've
and
just
searched out
been
the
lucky.
world time trial champs instead.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I do love the TTing for that reason. Like you don't have to think about the run after and you don't have, yeah, you're going in fresh. So it always feels so good, at least for the first half, and then it starts to sting a bit. But yeah, that's
Yeah.
fun.
How does your power compare in those time trials, Paula, versus say an equal length? What distance was the world champs time trial?
They're usually about 30K, 30
Okay.
to 40K.
What
And
sort
my
of power?
power, I feel like I'm way better at that short distance in power than I am like comparatively in a 70.3. Like for that, I would hold 295.
Wow.
And for a
Whoa.
70.3, I'll hold like 240 maybe. So big difference, 50 watts difference. But when I'm
Wow.
doing the TTing, I train much higher power as well. Like I'll do 4 or 5 minute reps at 320 or so, like something that I'd never do for a 70.3 type of program. So my body's ready for it, but it is a totally different effort.
Yeah. And being like in the cycling team, did you get access to more like aerodynamic testing and like some advice around equipment? Is that helpful?
No, I think when I drop into, I just go to Canadian Nationals and I've won that 3 times now and then get put on the world championship team, but I'm not really like on the national team or anything with any kind of access. But I'm lucky to work with Specialized and like I have access to some aerodynamic testing and good equipment through my triathlon path, but I'm definitely not on a cycling team and I don't think the cyclists like me necessarily that much, but
I was going to
it's
say,
a
it must be so
yeah.
annoying for all the cyclists, just like, oh, here she comes again. Shit. And you just
Yeah.
go and beat them all with no real proper bike training. I mean, no real.
They don't like it, but honestly, like as triathletes, we spend so much more time on our TT bikes than any cyclist does, I think. They ride more than us on the road, but I spend so much time on my TT bike, so I don't know. I feel a little bit like it's not that much of a surprise that we're good at time trialing, right?
Have you done any of
But
the sorry, last question. I know it's dragging
no,
on
it's
now.
okay.
Have you done any of the road racing with them as well though? We
No,
just did.
I've never jumped in a road race. I'm considering this year doing the TT and the road at Nationals. Mostly because I have a cycling coach now who could just like direct me on how to race a road race properly. But it's always just been too high of a risk for crashing or something happening that's because I'm not that comfortable in a big pack of people versus like the cyclists that race every weekend and they're so used to it. So it's just like risk versus reward. What am I doing this for? It's for my own enjoyment and self-satisfaction versus like going and doing my real job in triathlon. So if I crash and my season's over, that'd be terrible. But yeah, I'm considering it just because it sounds kind of fun. And as I get to these later years of my career, I'm trying to do like what sounds good, what gets me excited. So yeah.
Well, we might finish on that, Paula. Liz, thanks so much for coming on. Paula, it was awesome to talk to you, and we'll have to chat to Eric sometime as well. So that'd be cool. I hope that
Oh,
you,
he'd love to come on. He's
yes,
more
hey,
interesting than me. He has
should
a lot
get Eric and Glenn on, and we can have a
of
content creators
Yeah.
episode.
Yeah, Glenn is like one of Eric's heroes, so that'd be fun.
Oh gosh, Glenn's ego is going to be loving this.
When are you
All right.
racing next, Paula? When
Oh,
can we
sorry,
see
go.
you on the course?
I'm doing T100 San Francisco in a couple of weeks. My
Oh,
first T100
nice.
outing. Yeah, it's harder to get excited about those because it's. I go into St. George and I'm like, I could win this. But going into T100, you're like, I could have a great race and come 10th, and it's just less exciting. But we'll
Yeah.
see. I'm gonna try
Why not
hard.
Coral?
Well,
Yeah,
I'm tipping you
it's
for the win, Paula.
Oh, thank you. I don't know, but I'd be happy with it. A podium would be amazing. But it's a wild race. It's like Alcatraz, jump off the boat type of thing. So
Yeah, that's
anyone
swims
could
nuts,
win.
isn't it?
Yeah. Did you ever do it, Liz?
I did Alcatraz, obviously. T100
Yeah.
was not around, but I did watch the San Fran last year and just seeing some of the slower swimmers take the right current and come right up through. So you should watch that if you didn't already. I don't know if the currents will be the same, but
Yeah. There was a super strong current last year. We all swam in like 15 minutes and all got out together. So yeah, it's a factor.
All right, Paula, thanks
All
so
right.
much.
Well.
I'll just wrap up by saying, yeah, Liz, you don't need any athletes. You're not trying to promote anything, are you?
Me, no. I'm all good.
Apo, you've still got room for the right athlete, right?
Yeah, I've got a couple of slots. If anyone's interested, reach out to info@rpgcoaching.com. That's
Dot
the email,
com.
Tim.
That's it. Yep. Check it all out. We do have the subscription coming to a whole heap of new plans. Liz knows I was up till 12, finishing off some half marathon plans to add in there. And yes, I'm full up for one-on-one, but we've got some great coaches working with us. So reach out. And Paula, thank you so much again. We will
Thank you for
Paula,
having
meet you
me.
again,
Good chatting with you
hopefully.
guys.
Cheers.
Sounds
Thanks,
good.
Steve.
Bye.